hour number three of Sports 180, kicking off in a big way. I'm Heather Harrington, along with Vince Ferrara, and we're going to go back to the Stanley Fenton Gates Hotline, where former coach of the Auburn Tigers, now SEC Network analyst, Gene Chizik is on the phone, and I'm going to call you Coach still because that's what I remember you most for, Coach. Coach Chizik, did it ever cross your mind that when you were coaching, you needed a secret plan X that was going to be break in case of emergency? This is how to operate your football team during a global pandemic.
Yeah, Heather, it's kind of ironic. No, to answer your question, I didn't. I don't think anybody could have seen that coming. And, you know, of course, a lot of these guys are still good friends of mine, and I have constant conversations with them. And look, it's been a 3-month period of recalibration, right? Trying to, you know, obviously make sure that your team is as focused as they can be at a distance and staying in shape and doing all the things that they need to do so that they come back healthy. And then on top of that, you know, how are we going to, you know, move forward trying to get our team ready to play in a season that appears right now will not be kicked back any. We're going to have the same starting date we had before. And so those were the challenges. So, you know, now Zoom meetings and things of that nature have become obviously commonplace. But getting kids and coaches and staffs in a routine, on a routine for a new normal the last 3 months has been a pretty tall order. But I think most coaches have figured it out. It took them a couple of weeks. But I think with everything being said and all the situations the way it was, I feel like they did just about all they could do to try to get their teams ready.
So, Gene, what is the biggest challenge right now with this virtual coaching that's happening right now? You don't have the physicality. You don't have the quarterback-to-receiver chemistry and timing and things like that. What is the biggest challenge, do you think, right now that might see itself once you get back to the practice field?
Well, I think the first challenge is making sure that, you know, obviously the COVID protocols are going to be in place. Every school may look a little bit different. But I think that you got really intelligent people running the show at these different institutions, you know, from the coaches to the trainers to the doctors to everybody in play within each state. So I think, you know, they're going to do the right things with the COVID part. To me, what I don't think people really understand is the challenges of getting the team physically ready to play after really 3 months left. It's unprecedented. I mean, who can you ever remember a time that in a fall or in a spring semester that you essentially give your guys 10 to 12 weeks off? It's unheard of. So to me right now, there's some things lost in this. What about the guys that had shoulder surgery postseason in December or January, or knee surgery or back surgery? We turned those guys loose. They went home right now, and the most important thing they have to do is reason. Well, what do those guys look like? Now let's move on to the class, right? These guys haven't even reported yet. Some of them did report but never came back after spring break. What did they do when they went home? They don't even know what good looks like. They think they were in high school. You're counting on them to come in and contribute, but you haven't had them in not only the spring portion of it, but physically, are they going to be ready to play? So there's all these kind of outliers out there. And then look, the league, the SEC, and across the country, I speak of the SEC because I know the changes, about the coaching changes. You mentioned quarterback, wide receiver timing. Offenses in this league are all about, right? What about the new quarterbacks, the new coordinators, all those things in play? There's just a lot of moving parts to this. So I think there's a lot of challenges out there, starting with what kind of shape are they in so that we can line up with our real guys on September 5th, our guys that we went into the season thinking we would have. Are they going to be injured? Are they not going to be rehabbed enough? What is that going to look like? And then on top of that, well, we got the X and O portion of it that's a challenge as well.
Talking to Gene Chizik on Sports 180 today, and Coach Chizik, what I'm interested to see is how they're going to, like you were touching on, balance having sort of an elongated fall camp, but making sure guys aren't getting mentally burned out and fatigued before the action starts in live games that first week of September.
Yeah, and that's a great point, because what happens is ultimately in the coaches' minds, a lot of them don't really comprehend a lot of times that more isn't necessarily always better, right? So you have the component of, are these guys going to pop a hamstring? Are they going to be tired by the time we get to game one because we overtrained them. We overdid the walkthroughs. We overdid the meetings. We overdid because you're trying to overcompensate for things that you lost, and you really don't know where your guys are in terms of lining up September 5th because you've lost so much. But it has to have a start with they've got to be the best ability is availability, right? So that's number one. They got to be available. They got to be healthy. They got to be ready to go. They can't be burned out. All of those things that you can kind of measure. Because, you know, coaches are like trained little pigs, right? They know exactly what two-a-days ought to look like. They know what spring should have looked like. They know what the meeting should have looked like. Well, this is completely different. So you don't want to get fatigue. You don't want to get information overload. You don't want to, you know, drag these guys to the ground before they kick off on September 5th. And there's a delicate balance in there somewhere. And each coach has to figure that out. Where is that balance within their team?
Gene, can you give us some insight from a coach's perspective on the responsibility of the head coaches in these major programs right now with the social issues right now and supporting their black athletes and helping initiate action to change to help society and those players out?
Well, I can assure you this. I've read a lot of things. I've talked to a lot of these guys. This is an important issue to every single one of these guys. And, you know, people are going to call coaches out because they did or did not publicly come out and, you know, say what they needed to say. I think what you saw early on 4 or 5 days ago was I thought, you know, you saw coaches that were really trying to digest what this was. And to be quite frank, some of them were reluctant to get out there and get on a limb because, you know, look, it does matter what they say. It matters what they say. It matters how they say it. It matters the tone they use. Everything's going to be interpreted with a fine-tooth comb, right? And look, if it's too forceful, then, you know, you disappoint these people. If it's not forceful enough, then people think you don't get it. I read an article in Sports Illustrated about Dabo Swinney not really getting it. I disagree with that. I think he does get it. Now, to say that he gets it to the degree if he was of a different race. You can't say that. But the bottom line is he does get it. And, you know, look, you can come off as being disingenuous depending on how you do this. And people are going to look at you and go, wow, you know, he sounds like he just did that because he had to do it. Look, the most important thing for these coaches right now, yes, they can make change with the 100 people in their room, white, black, Asian, Hispanic, it doesn't matter. And that's where they have to start. Think about the impact each coach can have on 100 young men, you know, because they have them on a daily basis. And look, it starts with dialogue. It starts with education. It starts with these coaches being great listeners, being professionals to educate and talk to your guys. Football teams are families, and they have to make sure that their family is educated and they listen to each other, just like yours or my family would. But one thing I feel sure in talking to a lot of coaches is that our eyes have been open to something that I think now people can say, you know, we didn't really fully understand, and it wasn't because they didn't want to. You know, it's because they didn't know what they didn't know and couldn't comprehend it. And I think one of those things, you know, that's one of the things that's going to come out of this is that the coaches are going to really reevaluate, you know, the dialogues they've had with their teams, the dialogues they've had with their coaches. They respect the African-American players. I can promise you that. And they care about them. And so it's not if some of them stayed silent, their silence doesn't say that they're weak or they don't have an opinion. I can promise you they deeply care. But in the same sense, they have to be very judicious about what they say and how they say it. But the number one priority for them is their team and the influence they can have on those 125 young men at the moment. Not to say that socially right now they can't get out there and make a powerful statement. I'm just saying that in their reluctance is because they got to make sure they word it correctly.
We're talking to former Auburn head coach Gene Chizik, now SEC Network analyst. And Coach Chizik, I think you touched on a really interesting point there because it's 100 guys at least every single year. And the ripple effect of being a positive influence on those guys, that means 100 guys go out into the world at any given time, and they're either good citizens or they're not so good citizens.
That's exactly right. And I'll tell you, one of the things, you know, I always felt like in my years, football was a ministry to me. I felt like we had tremendous influence and impact on young guys. And when you have these guys around you hearing the same message for 3, 4, and 5 years, they're going to take with you, good or bad, they're going to take with them your message, what you impart on them. And to me, that, you know, there's so many people that are talking about what a coach can and can't say publicly, but he makes one statement and, you know, people forget about it in 4 or 5 days. But that team that he has of 125 guys, they hear that coach every day. So the plan that they have in place to move forward, to address social injustices, to address racial injustices, to be able to try to fix the problem with dialogue and education, they have the opportunity to make that difference with 125 guys every single day. And that's where their plan has to be great. It's not just about the words they use out there on social media. It's about the plan they have in place to make a difference with 125 guys they've been blessed to be around every single day. And that's every head coach's charge.
SEC Network analyst Gene Chizik joining us here on Sports 180. Last couple things with you, Coach. Appreciate your time. Where do you think Tennessee stands in terms of the SEC East right now, with the way Jeremy Pruitt and Tennessee finished last season and the momentum they've had in recruiting? Where do you see them sort of in that SEC East pecking order?
Well, I think it's going to be really interesting. You know, I was probably one of the few guys at the beginning of the season, you know, after the BYU game and the Georgia State game. I watched the film and I felt like, I even said it on the air, I felt like everything was correctable. I really did. I think Jeremy Pruitt is a heck of a football coach. I think he understands not just the game, he understands players, putting him in a position to succeed and win. They were one of the hottest teams in the league, if not the hottest team by the end of the year. The recruiting is definitely on the upswing, and if there's one thing Jeremy can do, he can recruit. He's got great rapport with the high school coaches in a lot of states, starting in Alabama, where he was one. Obviously, being under Nick for so many years and understanding the importance and what it takes to recruit, I think Tennessee is on the upslide. I really do. I really feel like good things are going to happen. Obviously, recruiting is the name of the game. It's the lifeblood of every team in this league. And you can be the greatest X and O guy. You can have all of the bells and whistles that you need, you know, to, you know, run blitzes and, you know, have fancy offenses and all those things. You better have dudes that can execute it. And I think they're headed in that direction. I like the mentality of the team. I like the physicality that I saw, because this is still a culture shift. Year three, you're still in a culture shift. And I think by the end of year three, you're going to really see things start to swing, and they're going to really grab some people's attention by the end of year three for Jeremy Pruitt.
Coach Chizik, we want to ask you your final thoughts. Having coached the Auburn Tigers, leading them to a national title, Pat Dye passing away earlier this week. What is your recollection of Pat Dye's legacy at Auburn, and what you learned about him kind of walking in his footsteps?
Yeah, he was an iconic figure, guys, and he was a great friend of mine. He was definitely a confidant, both when I was a defensive coordinator there in the early 2000s and my head coaching stint. He loved Auburn. He was an incredible football mind. He had a great perspective. I picked his brain a lot. You know, he used to come in when I was the defensive coordinator in 2002 through 4, and every Sunday he would be in there, and he would be a sounding board for me. He was always very truthful. He would tell you exactly like he was, and it was amazing, guys, because he would tell me things when I hadn't watched the film yet on Sunday morning from his perspective, just watching the game live. And sure enough, I'd go back and watch the film, and it was almost identically what he said. If it was good in such a way, it usually was. If it was poor in such a way, it usually was. He just had a really, really good football perspective, but he was a tough guy, those old school throwback guys, 2-time All-American at Georgia, but he was loyal. He was a man's man, hard-nosed guy. He loved Auburn. He couldn't even stand for games a lot of times because it just made him sick when the game was close because he couldn't control it and he didn't want to see Auburn lose. And he used to tell me, well, I left at halftime, Gene. So just a phenomenal man. I'll miss him tremendously. What he did for Auburn with the three consecutive SEC titles and bringing the Iron Bowl back to Auburn in 89 is phenomenal, and he'll never be forgotten, guys. He was a phenomenal man.
That's Gene Chizik, former Auburn football coach and now SEC Network analyst. Coach Chizik, we really appreciate you taking time out of your day to drop by and give us a lot of insight. We appreciate it on a lot of different topics.
Thanks, Coach.
Well, thanks, guys. I appreciate it, and y'all have a great day.
All right, and I don't say this lightly. I hope we see Coach Chizik back on the airwaves on the SEC Network analyzing real games, not only because I'm a fan of what he does on television, but because it means football is back there, Vince Ferrara.
Exactly right on both of those points.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you so much to Gene Chizik and the SEC Network for checking in with us. And remember, everybody joins us on the Stanley Fenton Gates Hotline.